Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into tonight's edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm your host, Ryan Porth, here with you with another fun hour of Preds talk here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on Preds Insiders. And I always say this when he comes on the show, is that Sean Henry is the number one Preds insider. There is not another person in this town that is more in tune with this franchise or is a bigger insider for this franchise than the CEO and president himself, Sean Henry, joining us here on the program once again this evening. Sean, how are we doing on this Monday evening?
Doing well. Thank you so much for having me on again. It's always fun.
Yeah, for sure. And I know there's a lot going on, even though no games are being played in the month of November here in Smashville or the other NHL arenas, just the weird year of 2020. There is still a lot going on for you guys with the Nashville Predators. And Sean, you know, you guys are huge on giving back to the community and everything that you do within the Predators Foundation. And I think a lot of people look at community work as giving back something financially to, you know, a charity or something of that ilk. But giving back to the community also means providing sources of entertainment, especially for younger kids. And Thursday, you guys have an exciting, groundbreaking announcement up in Montgomery County, up in Clarksville, where you guys will be breaking ground along with Austin Peay and Montgomery County on a multi-purpose facility in Clarksville that's set to open 2 years from now in the fall of 2022. I'm sure this is a very exciting time for you guys to be able to announce this.
Yeah, it really is, because as you said when you started out, we should be playing hockey right now. That's what we're used to doing. And right now, people should be complaining about our quote-unquote Western Canada trip, which would normally take that first week or so in November. And I wish we were complaining about that right now. But instead, you know, we're doing like everybody, the best we can, and trying to make sure that we're doing what we can. And for us, that is connecting with the community, whether it be celebrating Hockey Fights Cancer throughout the whole month or celebrating, you know, Phil Forsberg doing his hockey clinic this weekend. We have a chance to touch people's lives every day. And if we're not doing it, we're doing something wrong. But Thursday is another really good public example of, you know, working with a very aggressive politician, someone so passionate about his community, and that's Mayor Durrett, and then with a school that wants to continue to step forward in Austin Peay. And it really is exciting, because we've been working on this for, I've been here 10 years, and it seems I've been working on this once a month for about 9 years, and then with Mayor Durrett for about 6 or 7 years. And once he got involved, the whole conversation changed. It went from building a community ice rink to putting it in the middle of downtown in a very similar fashion to what Bridgestone Arena was 25 years ago when it was a premise, because it's right in the center of Clarksville. And the idea is to build an entertainment district around the arena and ice sheets, to then partnering with Austin Peay. And, you know, their athletic director is a fun source of the answer is yes. How do we do it together? And it's so much fun to be able to work with, you know, two people like that, because there were a lot of reasons for this not to happen, especially once COVID hit. There became another whole set of reasons for someone to say, why don't we hold off? Why don't we wait? But it's a great project. You know, it's going to be two sheets of ice, a roughly 6,000 seat arena, a practice court for Austin Peay men and women's basketball programs, a home for their program. And it's going to be an event center that allows us to program things in such a unique way. We're just so excited about it. And we really, really are. And like always, whenever you get a chance to give people an opportunity to do something, especially kids, it makes their life better. So whether you're learning how to skate from, you know, maybe the greatest skater in my lifetime, Scott Hamilton, to engaging with you know, our youth hockey programs or our adult hockey programs, to just get out there and having a fun time and skating with your friends on a Saturday morning. It's going to be a great project.
Sean Henry on the line with us here at Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Sean, this is now the third venue with rinks that you guys are helping build here in Middle Tennessee. First it was Antioch, then it was Bellevue, now it's Clarksville. How high up the food chain was it for you when you first came in to Nashville and worked for the Predators back in 2010? How high up the food chain was it for you to provide and the organization to provide these local ice rinks that can bring youth hockey to this area and also boost the youth hockey in this area to get more kids playing the sport?
Well, for me, it was really important for a lot of reasons, not just about building a rink to get kids to play hockey, but about building a rink to get kids to add an activity to what they're doing. We don't want kids to stop doing something to play hockey. We want them to play hockey in addition to what else they're doing, whether that's a club at school or a band or a different sport. We just have a very simple belief, and I think more and more people are coming back around to it, that the more things that a kid's involved with, the better it is for that child's development. And then when you put, let's face it, the best team sport for a kid to play to build out certain characteristics in the center of that, and it's hockey, it's even that much better. But whether someone, does our goal program, Get Out and Learn, or Junior or Little Preds or predecessor, no matter where you end up playing or stop playing, once you play hockey at any level, you're a hockey player for life. My older daughter did a goal program, predecessor program, and then played 1 year of rec hockey. She's 17 years old today. She is a hockey player in her head, and that's an amazing thing. My younger daughter is still playing. Both my boys played forever. My oldest son's coaching now. It's just a great sport to fit in the middle of someone's life. So it was everything, but then it's also an economic driver. So when Carl Dean came to us and said, let's build one, let's do this together, and if it works, we'll build a second one. And he's the one that picked Antioch and said, look, from a development standpoint, that part of the city has been going in the wrong direction for too many years. Let's hit the brakes, let's build this and see what happens around it. And you look at the renaissance that's going on out there with the sheer volume, thousands and thousands of real jobs moving in and around our rink. And then Nashville SC just announced they're building their practice facility right down the road. It's so much fun to see that old abandoned mall be a vibrant campus with a park and the rec center and the library, Bridgestone's backbones out there, our activity, Nashville State. There's just so much going on. Smile Direct, drops a couple thousand jobs in the middle of Antioch. That probably doesn't happen without Mayor Dean's vision. Same thing with Bellevue. Abandoned mall. For 10 years, people talked about what it was going to be. It took a visionary, mayor to say, let's do this. Let's push that domino on it. And then we had a chance to work with a few different administrations to see it get done. And the same thing's happening in Clarksville now. You have a very passionate set of mayors, both the city mayor and the county mayor, that said nothing will stop this because it makes sense. And it's a good thing for our overall community. And what I love about the announcements is then we get everyone in Williamson County, Rutherford County, Sumner County, every county around, from Bowling Green to Huntsville to Chattanooga to Memphis, that says, where's ours? Where's mine? I always say the same thing. You need to work with your local politicians, your local government, to say this is important. We should have, at least one of these, and have them reach out to build it together, because that's what it has to be. It's not that I'm the dumbest guy in the world, and I know that a rink will work really well in Williamson County. So for all the people listening to this right now, sending me an email about, hey, moron, what about here? That moron answer is anywhere in the state, rinks will work. And it's plural. It's not singular. And I hate when people ask me, well, how many is enough? Like, I don't know. And I make the joke in a newspaper article today saying, how many donuts are enough, right? There's never-ending supply. Let's just get more and more and more because, these centers become drivers of activity, drivers of economic development, and then drivers of better characteristics in people of all ages.
Sean, you brought up the word passion, and there are a lot of passionate hockey fans and Preds fans in the Clarksville area. I think there's maybe a mindset around town that maybe you don't remember Clarksville being in Montgomery County because it's not a part of the 8-county metro, but Clarksville is a highly populated area. I know a lot of our listeners do come from Clarksville, and there are a lot of Preds fans up in Clarksville that have been, yearning for something like this. What has the response been in Clarksville to this?
You know, it's been incredible. And every time, you know, we're up there for meetings, and we've been up there a lot over the past 6, 7, 8 years, the reception's been amazing. You know, it's one of the fastest growing cities in the state. It's one of the fastest growing counties in the state. You look at the sheer diversity of businesses just dropping into Montgomery County and into Clarksville. And then you have the vibrancy of the military base, and, you know, so many men and women that served our country decide to stay in that area because it was just rated the number one city in America to live in. So it's a great place to be. It's 45 to 60 minutes away from Nashville, so it just offers so much. But it always kills me when I'm at the rink with my own kids or just there, you know, working. When you hear people driving from Clarksville to participate in our youth hockey programs, that's a pretty big commitment. You know, whether it's 45 minutes or an hour or 75 minutes, each way, I mean, that's a lot. So I'm really excited about it. And when you look at our season ticket base, it's a crazy number of people that come from Montgomery County. And it's fun to be able to, you know, put that dot on the I, if you will, when people say, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? And it's nice to say, well, it's going to be open in 2 years. It really will be. And again, there have been about 5 or 6 individuals that have been so supportive and passionate about this. Non-politicians, just, you know, people that love our game, love what this could do for us, saw what happened in Antioch and wanted to make it happen there, that really were very vocal citizens, that they were the first ones to say, let's do it. And they supported it all the way. And I always say, the rinks will be built in other cities and other counties, not by the Predators, but by individuals speaking out and saying, we need this. And not to me, but to their mayors and their representatives and council people.
Sean, you mentioned earlier in the segment how this has been a busy month so far and will continue to be a busy month for the Nashville Predators. What all do you guys have going on with Hockey Fights Cancer Month?
Well, you know, normally we celebrate Hockey Fights Cancer 2 days a year over 2 different games, one in November and normally one in March. And it's a incredible night. It's a passionate night. It's a moving night. It's a night of reflection, remembrance, sadness, but there's always a little inspiration underneath that as well. But it's one day in the month of November. Obviously, we don't have our games right now to amplify that, so we're saying, okay, let's take the whole month and make it Hockey Fights Cancer Month. Let's celebrate, you know, the incredible, you know, young boys and girls that have taken on a fight that they shouldn't be in. I mean, no one should take this on, and it hits them in so many different ways, and celebrate some of the former mayors of the Hockey Fights Cancer, tell their stories again. One of my favorite ones is a young man that went to school with my son, is a year older than him. Yeah, I met him. He was a skinny, you know, 15-year-old kid that, you know, was fighting cancer. And you look at him now, he's 26 years old, you know, 10 years later. He's a healthy, vibrant young man that he talks about the celebration of his battle 10 years ago as if it was yesterday. And that's pretty moving. We have a chance to tell that story every day throughout the month. We have a chance to raise money every day throughout the month, which is so important. We need more and more and more money to go towards research and care and comfort, you know, for people who are fighting against this. You know, the survival rate of pediatric cancer continues to grow, and it's incredible where we are today versus where we were just 10 years ago, not 20 years ago. But the fact is, it's still not high enough. Until pediatric cancer is a term of the past, we still have a lot of work to do, but we have a chance to connect with all of our players who are so passionate, to all of our fans. Every week we have different auctions going on. There's just an opportunity to give and celebrate and support and reflect on your own, you know, family going through it, whether it be buying the foam pucks, you get to keep one you write their name on, you throw it in the net at Bellevue Ice Center, or you go ring the bell because you're a month cancer-free or a year or 5 years or 10 years. We have the cancer bell in Antioch, Ford Ice Center. Go out there and ring it and celebrate where you're sitting, or celebrate, you know, the loved ones that unfortunately you lost for the battle, and let's make sure that other people don't suffer in the same way. And again, the faster we raise more money for research, the faster this really can become a term of the past. And you know, when people first started saying that phrase 20, 30, 40 years ago, it was a crazy thought that we could eradicate this, but we're on that path when you look at the survival rates right now. But again, until we're not talking about survival rates, and we're just talking about it doesn't exist anymore, there's still a lot of work to get done. So I'm just so thankful for, you know, everyone in our organization, our players, and all of our fans are so generous with their spirit. And let's face it, I don't know a person that hasn't been touched in the wrong way by cancer, and I don't think you could name anyone either. It's awful what it does to families for such a long period of time. So here's our opportunity to celebrate them and get a chance to bring a little bit of comfort to them and at the same time raise money for research.
Sean Henry, Predators president and CEO. Sean Henry here with us on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Most of this segment has been about what's going on off the ice. What about on the ice? Coming up next, I will ask Sean the million-dollar question going on in a lot of hockey people's minds. That's coming up next right here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday evening, the Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher, coming up at the top of the hour at 7 p.m. I'm lucky to be joined by Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators here. He is on the line with me this evening. And Sean, all right, so last segment we talked about what's going on in Montgomery County later this week with the groundbreaking of the new multi-purpose facility in Clarksville. You've got Hockey Fights Cancer Month going on. And we said tongue-in-cheek that normally we would have hockey going on right now. And unfortunately, we don't because of everything going on here in 2020. So the million-dollar question that I'm getting from either family or friends is, when is this?
Quite the cliffhanger, by the way, Ryan. I mean, you went to a break. I said a million-dollar question. I've been, like, dying to hear what it is.
Well, here it is. When is next hockey season going to start?
Well, I mean, obviously, not soon enough for any of us. And that's the real key. I don't care if you're a fan, a player, an employee. It doesn't matter. We all want the return of our normal, you know, fall sports and our winter sports. And, you know, a few weeks ago, Gary Bettman said, you know, our game will be back on in January, and that's what we're gunning for right now. And what I really, really admire about the job that our commissioner did and all of our teams, we all partnered on creating the summer playoffs that we did. We never boxed ourselves in with definitive, this has to happen by this date, or this has to happen, or we can't do X, Y, and Z. It was, the goal is very simple, to get all the guys back on the ice as soon as we can, as safe as we can, to conduct a full playoff series. We didn't know if that was going to be 8 teams, 16 teams, 31 teams, or 24 teams, and we ended up creating a pretty dynamic playoff format with 24 teams. Obviously, I wish one of us played a little longer than we did. I wish one of us won the last game of the year. Unfortunately, we didn't. But it was amazing. And that's what happens when, again, our commissioner with all the staff at the league and then partnering with all of the teams and the players and the players' union saying, okay, this is what the goal is. Let's get on the ice as soon as we can. And then let's continue to evolve with the pandemic. As we learn things, as things change, let's make sure we didn't create any scenario that we can't evolve as well. So it can't happen soon enough, but I'm really excited to know that we all have January circled, and that's what the goal is. And let's face it, this team has a lot of hockey, a lot of fun hockey to play, and it'll be really fun to see us be able to play together with John Hines as our coach going into a training camp that he'll control, and then he'll be able to, you know, create something very special with this group of players.
Yeah, and I said million-dollar question and asked the question almost tongue-in-cheek because I knew you don't have answers. Gary Bettman doesn't have answers on what the exact date is going to be because you guys are, as a league, waiting to see how everything plays out, not only health-wise, but, you know, there's also the important factor of the border between U.S. and Canada. So there are a lot of complications and a lot of obstacles that the league is working through to make this season happen. What is it like to be a part of those conversations with all these different factors going into making a regular season happen?
Yeah, it's probably going to sound corny how I'm going to say it, but it's a pretty moving experience. It's almost emotional because every week you're on 2, 3, 4, 5 different calls, depending on what committees you're on or who you're bouncing ideas off of. But it really is amazing when every team and the players and the league are coming together to say, okay, here's a challenge. How do we take it on? Or, hey, when we return to play, what does it look like in each arena? What does it look like from a fan perspective? What does it look like from a broadcast perspective? And to collaborate with guys that you talk to quite a bit during the year normally And, you know, you have four or five really good friends with four or five different teams that you normally bounce more off of from time to time. In this format, I'm talking on a regular basis to 30 other teams and probably 15 different people at the league office on things that we don't normally talk about. So we're building better relationships. We're building better systems. And it really has been a pretty humbling experience. You know, for a guy, this is all I've ever done. I mean, I've done this my entire, you know, career or life. And at 53 years of age, to step back and realize through this pandemic, we're having more meaningful conversations and building better relationships with partner teams than I ever have before is pretty incredible. And I can't wait to get through the pandemic for all the right reasons that we all want. I mean, too many people are suffering on too many fronts every single day. So that's the given. We all want to get past that for those reasons. But then when you just look, you know, selfishly at our own business and our own sport, I'm so excited to get on the other side of this because these relationships that are being forged are amazing. And we can take on almost any challenge or opportunity for growth for our league because of them, I think.
Now, Sean, I know the trickle-down effect and, come, you know, sort of the underlying questions, I should say, from, all right, when is the season going to start? When it starts, will fans be in the arenas? And if fans are allowed in the arenas, what would your message be to Preds fans if they want to be a part of that experience that we've been missing out on since mid-March?
Well, I think you don't have to look very far. You look at, you know, what baseball went through, and you went from no fans to a few fans to a few more in the World Series. And the NFL right now, you know, yesterday at Nissan Stadium, there were 13, 14,000 people. You know, each state, each municipality will be a little bit different on where they are and what's allowed. Like I said, you know, we're going to take our guidelines from the federal government or the CDC, then the state government, then the local government, then our own overlay on top of that, and then our league's overlay on top of that as well. But universally, and I cannot believe this was ever politicized, but the fact is, if universally masks were worn, it would give the CDC and the local Board of Health so much more confidence in saying, okay, being this is not an issue and everyone's wearing them, we could probably be a little bit more aggressive in some of the reopenings or some of the sizes of crowds. The problem is, as you know, in a lot of places where you walk into, from a restaurant or the street, there's still a fairly high population that's not wearing the masks or want to challenge it for some weird reason. Whether you believe they work or not, I'm not even going to take on. But even if you believe they don't work, those people should still believe if you're wearing them, it'll build confidence in the Board of Health and the CDC, and that's who's going to drive forward what we're doing. So the higher level of compliance we all have, the faster we're going to get to where we all, you know, love. And if you believe the science, and I do, the faster we get to 100% compliance in masks, the safer we're all going to be as well. So that's what we all need to do. And there's going to be a lot of change. There's going to be a little inconvenience here or there. And we've seen it in Fort Ice Center. You know, when we first opened, people were so happy about being back. If we made them hop on one foot and, you know, you'd have to do this, and this odd things to get back in the venue, they were happy to do it. Now that we've been open for 3 or 4 months, you know, you have a few people saying, well, why can't, you know, why do I have to wear a mask? Why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? Well, because we want to stay open. And we want to keep growing the offerings that we have. Now, I got an email from one of your colleagues, a reporter, the other day that wanted to know how come he and his son couldn't do X, Y, and Z. I said, because we want to stay open. And if you did that, then all, you know, 100 other kids would have to do it, and that would violate all these other procedures, and we'd have to shut back down. So the biggest message to our fans and our partners and ourselves is there will be some inconvenience. There'll be something that we do on a Tuesday that we change on Wednesday and we change back on Thursday, and that's something that we should all embrace and tolerate some inconvenience again to reopen where we want to be. And that's the same in airlines and restaurants and doctor's office, whatever it may be. We all have to accept that whatever the greatest science is today may change tomorrow, and that we accept that new science. Whatever policy we put in today, we might do a 180 on tomorrow and then a 180 on it again. And that's frustrating, you know, for consumers, any one of us that buys something from someone else when the rules change. You get frustrated, mm-hmm. But I think what I always say is let's not get frustrated with anyone making decisions right now. someone's making a decision. They're doing what they think is right. Let's try to embrace it and improve upon it.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, there's been a lot of back and forth with regulations because there really isn't a playbook for COVID-19. We're going through a lot of different times that we've never experienced before at many different levels within this country and the world. So patience is 1,000% of virtue in these times in 2020. But Sean, one thing that, you know, it's come to mind to me here in the last couple months as sports as a whole has come back in one form or fashion, some with fans, some without fans, that when we get to the point where we can have at least 50% everywhere, or let's face it, 100% capacity back in Bridgestone Arena or back at Nissan Stadium or back at your favorite baseball team's ballpark, that is going to be such a gratifying and almost, for me, a moving feeling knowing that we went through all of this for however long it would have taken to get back to this point. And I know I'm never going to take that moment and those experiences for granted again.
You know, you're so right, and you touched on it a little bit earlier too. As we all do show that patience, there's this unity that's coming about too, where we're all coming together to push the country forward. We're all coming together to push us all forward safely. And I think that will, it's just creating a nicer way to live. It really is. And you're not that old, but I remember after 9/11, how the country really did come together to celebrate each other, to thank each other, and to build new policies and rules to do certain things. You know, how we traveled, how we entered venues, you know, how we opened mail even. And the acceptance of people to say, you know, we need to do this. It might be a little inconvenient, but it's the right thing. It's a smart thing. It was such a, it's hard to say it was nice because off of such tragedy was built, but it really was. There was a nice glow around our country for a month or 6 months or a year. And some of those things still continue today. I think we're going to see that same type of, you know, come together unity. And we already have to some degree. I do think once we're all back at, you know, full weddings and unfortunately funerals where you can be together and mourn together or celebrate different things together and kids can go to graduations and proms together, I think there's going to be such a level of appreciation that there'll be another layer of special memories off of it.
Sean Henry is the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators. Sean, thank you, as always, for joining me here on Preds Insiders. Always enjoy your perspective, and hope we get to high-five each other at Bridgestone Arena for a game in the not-too-distant future.
Well, I can't wait for that. And until then, I might just settle for the next interview with you to be in, you know, Jared Stillman's studio. It looks like a pretty cool place to hang out. So maybe someday you and I can get an invite, you know, to that bachelor pad.
Well, you know, the studio in Green Hills is certainly probably the nicest studio in town, and I'll just leave it at that. Sean, thank you so much for joining me once again.
Ryan, thank you. Love the show, and thanks for having me on.
Sean Henry, ladies and gentlemen, always enjoy his perspective on all things Smashville. If you didn't catch that full conversation, you'll be able to catch it on demand at thegamenashville.com at the top of the hour. Coming up next, we'll get into a little bit more of on-ice stuff with Adam Vinken of The Athletic, or is it on court? We'll discuss that coming up next. It's Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on The Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here, about to be joined by Adam Vinken of The Athletic. Of course, Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Adam Vinken on the line with us here to talk about a couple of his recent stories in The Athletic and the Predators overall. Adam, how are we doing this evening?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Just powering through another Monday here in the great city of Nashville, Tennessee. And Adam, last week, or I should say over the weekend, you put out a story about how the Toronto Raptors are seeking an American-based home, at least temporarily, as the NBA looks to get their season off the ground just before Christmas. And Bridgestone Arena, and the city of Nashville as a potential suitor for the Toronto Raptors. So not quite starting with the Nashville Predators directly, but it sounds like the Nashville Predators could be getting, a neighbor, at least temporarily, potentially, here in the coming months.
Yes, perhaps they will have a co-tenant.
There you go.
At Bridgestone Arena. I learned this past weekend that Raptors officials toured Nashville and the Bridgestone Arena facilities last week as they consider Nashville as a potential temporary home for the franchise. And as you mentioned, Ryan, the NBA tentatively has approved the start of a reduced season. I believe it's December 22nd. And as we learned with Major League Baseball and the Toronto Blue Jays, it seems unlikely that the Raptors will be able to play their games in Toronto because the Canadian border still remains closed for non-essential travel. The Blue Jays, of course, played their home games for the reduced MLB schedule in Buffalo, New York. The Raptors are considering their options, and Nashville is one of them. You know, other cities that have been mentioned are Kansas City, Missouri, Tampa, Florida, Newark, New Jersey. One thing that the Raptors would like is to have a temporary home close to their division rivals, which are the Philadelphia 76ers, Boston Celtics, Brooklyn Nets, and New York Knicks. So Nashville, not quite in that region, of course, but we know that Nashville being centrally located, the flights there to those cities are not particularly long, even though they are in the central time zone versus the eastern time zone. So there are, certain things about Nashville that I imagine are attractive to the Toronto Raptors. Now, of course, their priority is to remain in Toronto and play their home game where they're supposed to play their home games. There is no certainty whether Nashville will ultimately be the temporary home of the Raptors, but they are in consideration to be hosting an NBA team here in Nashville, just in case.
Interesting story that I know a lot of people in Nashville will be keeping an eye on as we move forward. And December 22nd is not that far away, and you would have to think that the Toronto Raptors would have to have this figured out, I don't know, by Thanksgiving? Wouldn't you say?
I would have to imagine it would be in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, December 22nd, only, 6 weeks away?
It will be here before we know it.
So they would have to work quickly. But as we know, Bridgestone Arena is equipped to host basketball. The regular home of the SEC men's basketball tournament, as well as hosting NCAA tournament games in the past as well. So no issue from that perspective in terms of Bridgestone Arena being outfitted for an NBA team if necessary.
We will see if that does come to fruition for Bridgestone Arena and the city of Nashville here in the coming days or weeks. Adam, also at theathletic.com earlier today, you put up the results of an interesting fan survey, which was conducted here in the last couple weeks. Close to 1,000 readers participated in this fan survey, containing 15 questions. And going through this, I was not really surprised at almost anything in this fan survey, just knowing the pulse of a lot of the fans that I know here in Nashville. But one of my biggest takeaways, Adam, was that the fan base seems to be split on UC Saros almost evenly, whether or not they feel like he's the next guy or whether or not he's just going to flame out. Your question specifically was, how confident are you that UC Saros will become the Predators' next franchise goaltender? And from 1 through 5, with 5 being the highest, the average rating of the votes was 3.0, which is smack dab in the middle. So it feels like there is a split feeling over UC Saros, which to me is no surprise at all, given the fact that he has been hot and cold since he came here to Nashville.
Yes, I think certainly that fans were encouraged by the way that UC played after the coaching change. I think we both can agree that his play was a significant reason that the Predators were able to bounce back following the hiring of John Hines and ultimately qualify for the postseason. His play, however, in that qualifying round loss to the Coyotes in August was uneven at best. As we discussed then, he certainly didn't do anything, in my opinion, to cost them that series, but he didn't do anything to help them win either. And I think that is the product of, you know, a goaltender making his first postseason starts of his career. I mean, at the end of the day, as I mentioned in the story, UC Saros in the regular season has only started 104 NHL games. So he is still a relatively unproven goaltender. I mean, there is a large enough sample size, but in terms of being a starter, he is an unproven goaltender, just based on the sample size. So I was not surprised either that the average rating of the close to 1,000 participants in the poll had UC Saros at a 3.0, which, as you said, was right in the middle, 1 through 5. I certainly think, and another question in the poll was whether drafting Yaroslav Askarov at number 11 was the right choice. And overwhelmingly, fans said yes. I think it was close to 70% of fans who participated said that was the right pick. And I think UC Saros is in an interesting spot because I assume that next year and the year after, he will be the primary starter for the Predators. But in 2 years from now, in 2022, when Askarov's KHL contract expires, that'll make things very interesting. The Predators perhaps have the best goaltending pipeline in the league between Saros, Connor Ingram, and Askarov. So, you know, there is no shortage of options. But, you know, if UC Saros cannot prove in these next couple of years that he can be a franchise-type goaltender, like Pekka was for most of his career, you know, he'll have Askarov breathing down his neck. So this is a very important point in Saros's career to prove that he can handle this workload more often, you know, at a more regular pace.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say, Adam, that the selection of Askarov shortened the leash a little bit long term for UC Saros and being the franchise goaltender. To your point, if Saros is proving that he can't be that top notch goaltender by this time in 2022, you could be seeing Askarov sooner than maybe projected, I guess I should say, here in Nashville. So
yeah, absolutely. And you know, certainly, you know, we look at next year, the potential of a 1A and 1B with Saros and Rene, and then perhaps in 2021-22, you know, Saros taking more of the reins with potentially Connor Ingram as his backup, and then you have Askarov coming over after that, presumably. So, you know, UC Saros, as you said, maybe has a bit of a shorter leash than we might have thought before the draft. The other result that I found to be interesting in the survey, I asked which underperforming forward has the best chance of bouncing back next season, Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, Matt Duchene, or Ryan Johansson. And Philip Forsberg won the vote. I believe he had 43-44% of the vote, with Matt Duchene and Victor Arvidsson each picking up about 25%. That left, I think, like 7 or 8% for Ryan Johansson. It really seems to me, and this is not just a reflection of the poll, but it just seems, as you said, we both have our fingers on the pulse of the fan base. It seems as if, though, the fan base at large has really soured on Ryan Johansson. And I think the fact that less than 10% of respondents have the faith in him to bounce back, or he has the best chance of bouncing back, I think speaks volumes in that regard.
Well, Ryan Johansson's regular season career in a Nashville Predators uniform, I don't think gives fans much faith that he would bounce back compared to the other three names that you provided as an option, where Forsberg, yeah, and Arvidsson have huge seasons in Preds jerseys, and then Matt Duchene at previous stops in Colorado, Ottawa, and then for a brief time in Columbus, has put up big numbers at times within his career, even though his career averages are about what he performed like last season.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me is our statistical guru, Dom Lecision, did a series of stories last week talking about contract efficiency. And he had a story with the 10 best contracts. He had a story with the 10 worst contracts. And then he had a team-by-team look at overall efficiency. And according to Dom, Ryan Johansson, I think, has the fourth worst contract in the league. Oof. When you consider Dom's model for determining such things based on how much he is paid and what he has produced. I mean, Ryan Johansson, for the most part, has not lived up to that contract since signing it in 2017, in the summer of 2017. And I just get the sense that, you know, now that Kyle Turris isn't here, now that Mikael Granlund isn't here, I think Ryan Johansson might, you know, take the role of whipping boy among the Predators fan base.
Adam Finkin of The Athletic here with us on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Preds Insiders, on this Monday evening, the Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher coming up at the top of the hour, so stay tuned for that. Now, a couple weeks ago on this very program, Adam, I had John Hines on, who was very gracious with this time. We appreciate him coming on. And I asked John Hines a question about the offense, and I've got the question here with his response to follow. And, Adam, I want to get your perspective on what John Hines had to say about my question about the Predators forwards. When you look at your offense, what do you see beyond just that first line with the Jofa line, hypothetically, and, you know, how the offense shapes up going into next season?
I see how you have the Jofa line. You know, we could keep that together. I think then you have, you know, Duchesne at center. I think Cunning's going to have an opportunity to be able to perform, you know, the way that we think he can. And, you know, as you said, I think sometimes we lost some really good players and some really good people. That's the fact. But, you know, it's also something to have more competitiveness in your lineup, and meaning we have a spot on that on Duchesne's line open. Is it going to be Cousins? Is it going to be Tolvanen? Is it going to be Yarncroc? Is it going to be Sissons? Is it going to be Trent? Who's going to come in and be able to take that role with an opportunity? And I think that's something that was missing from the team. And, you know, sometimes when you can come into training camp and everyone just feels like, oh, well, here's your top six and here's your 6-9 and here's a 9-12. Well, this is all I am. There's no competitiveness within your lineup to push each other, to drive each other, to hold guys accountable to inconsistent play, that someone's always ready to cut. They can pop in, they can take your job. You're adding guys into your team and into a training camp in the beginning of a season that there's opportunity, there's hunger there. And that's something that we feel we have a lot of competitive opportunities for the forwards. And lots of times when you have that, you know, one or two of these guys is going to hit. And I also think it's going to raise the performance of guys that either didn't perform as well as they needed to over the past season, but you're also infusing a mindset of opportunity and competitiveness into your team that lots of times can help take a jump.
All right, so that was John Hines, Predators head coach, on with me on Preds Insiders just a couple weeks ago. Adam, I want to get your perspective on what he had to say there, specifically when I asked about the offense at the beginning of the question, and he started listing off the potential names for the second line.
Yeah, there were a lot of them. And I agree with John in the sense that perhaps there had been I don't want to put words in his mouth, but for me, I feel like there might have been a sort of the sense of complacency in the lineup, in the sense that, as John said, everyone's spots seemed to be accounted for, you know, last season. So there really wasn't much of that internal competition necessarily. But now you do. I mean, think about the players that are gone. I mean, you have four members of the Predators' top nine no longer on the team: Nick Bonino, Mikael Granlund, Craig Smith, and Kyle Turris. I mean, that opens up a huge opportunity, or opportunities rather, for many of those players, specifically the younger players. You know, he mentioned Ellie Tolvanen, and he mentioned Jakob Trenin. You know, Luke Cunning is 22 years old, and so he is a young player, even though he has NHL experience. I think that can be good for this group. You know, there are questions about whether or not this offense overall got worse just because of the veteran offensive-minded talent that walked out of the door. I mean, I know that players like Turris and Smith and Granlund maybe didn't always meet expectations, but, you know, they have more offensive talent naturally than Nick Cousins and Brad Richardson and Luke Cunning. So I do think that this will be good for everybody. You know, there are a lot of question marks, of course. I mean, you know, I look at a player like Ellie Tolvanen, for example. I mean, this is sort of the make or break year, it feels like, for Tolvanen. He's 21 years old. He's still very young. but he's played 3 years of professional hockey. He has not had an opportunity to stick in the NHL yet. I think he's going to get a great opportunity on that second line with Matthew Shane, presumably. And, you know, what will he do with that opportunity? Is he ready? And if he's not, you know, that might make things more difficult for this team. But, you know, one thing for certain, this team, to me, on paper, might be less talented. It is less talented on paper. But they are going to be tougher to play against, which was David Poile and John Hines's number one priority in the offseason, was to get this team tougher and harder to play against. And they absolutely accomplished that. Now, of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that the players they acquired are devoid of offensive ability, but they absolutely need those players, Luke Cunningham, Nick Cousins, Elie Tolvanen. They need players like that to step up and take these spots. So I agree with John. I mean, I think training camp, however it will look this year, whenever it will be, I think is going to have more intrigue than, you know, than it has had in several years.
Adam Fingan of The Athletic here with us on Preds Insiders. Adam, another take that I had from that audio that you heard just now from John Hines was that it sounds like Luke Cunningham is going to get every shot imaginable on that second line. You know, Cunningham was the first name that he listed. Tolvanen ended up being in, you know, kind of thrown into the list of other names that he mentioned after Duchesne and Cunningham. But it does sound like Cunningham is going to get a fair shot on that second line. And if one of those other names sticks on the second line, you know, I know there are a lot of Preds fans out there clamoring for Mike Hoffman. I don't know if that's going to happen.
At this point, I'm skeptical that that's going to happen. I mean, the last time that I checked, the Predators were certainly among the teams that were interested in Mike Hoffman. As you said, Ryan, I do not know if that is going to happen. It certainly sounds as if though Mike Hoffman is willing to bide his time and wait till we have more of a definitive idea of what the season is going to look like. You know, I think if David Poile wanted to use his abundance of cap space, it would be better to use it by trading for a player on a cap-strapped team. You know, think of like the Tampa Bay Lightning, for example, and then signing a free agent. But Luke Cunningham, you know, he has offensive ability. You know, he hasn't broken out yet necessarily at the NHL level with the Minnesota Wild, but he has a strong pedigree, you know, in international competition in that lower level. He's only 22 years old, so there's room to grow. You know, my colleague at The Athletic, Michael Russo, who covers the Wild, described him as a poor man's Ryan Kesler, which certainly, you know, we know the kind of pain in the butt Ryan Kesler can be, as well as a player who can score and put up points. And the Predators need somebody like that. And maybe Luke Cunningham can be that player. He can be, you know, that in-your-face player who can pot 15 goals. I certainly think Luke Cunningham has certainly has the talent to be a 15 to 20 goal scorer in the NHL. He does a really good job of getting to the slot area. I think if he can do a better job of that, his shooting percentage will go up and his goals will go up. So, I mean, I see a really big opportunity for Luke Cunningham on that second line.
Adam Fingan of The Athletic, always appreciate your time here on the program. And hopefully we get some news here in the not too distant future about what the NHL campaign will look like in 2021.
All right, get your Nashville Raptors gear now.
Hopefully it resembles the throwback look of the late 90s, because I am here for that.
Well, I mean, it's very prehistoric, you know, Raptors, Predators. It works quite well.
It absolutely does. Adam Fingan of The Athletic, thank you again, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
My pleasure. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. That was Adam Fingan of The Athletic. Always appreciate his time here on Preds Insiders and his coverage of the Nashville Predators at The Athletic. That's all we have for Preds Insiders here on this Monday evening. If you missed any part of this episode, you can catch it on demand at thegamenashville.com. Coming up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, it is the Commodore Hour with Joe Fisher. Keep it locked right here on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.